Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio. I'm your host here on the Heritage Radio Network. And today we're being sponsored by TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving individual customers, creative professionals, and Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation on its expertise in technology, sales, and service. As a company that believes in honest and forthright business practices, TechServe is proud to sponsor Heritage Radio Network in the promotion of sustainable lifestyles, and we're very happy to have them as a sponsor. Today, I wanted to let you know that we're going to talk some plant pornography. Well, not exactly, but I needed a hook for some of you who might say, oh, what are we talking about today? Vegetables and gardening? Well, indeed we are, but like no vegetables and gardening that you know of. My guest today is Amy Goldman. Amy is a gardener, an author. She's the chairman of the board of directors of Seed Savers Exchange. She's a sculptor, but she is an incredible, what can I say, food whisperer, vegetable whisperer, melon whisperer. She's actually often been referred to as a vegetable rights activist, and it's my pleasure to welcome Amy Goldman. Welcome, Amy.
Lynn, it's delightful to be here today.
And I was showing Amy the garden here on top of Roberta's. Roberta's has one, I think it was one of the first rooftop gardens to supply them with all their vegetables and salad needs, and it's really impressive what they're doing. And I'm just sorry that their gardener isn't here to talk with us today, because I'm sure she would be loaded with questions, because you seem to have all the right answers.
Well, I felt right at home the minute I saw those wonderful container gardens.
Oh, that's great. Amy's most recent book is The Heirloom Tomato, and her previous books are Melons for the Passionate Grower and The Complete Squash. Each of them, I can't say one is more beautiful than the other. They're all beautiful. They are just, I was actually devouring them as I looked at them.
Well, that's just what I hoped would happen. My aim was to try to seduce people into growing heirloom vegetables, and certainly, or appreciating them.
Well,
and
you,
working with Victor Schrager, who was my photographer, is one of the best things that ever happened to me.
How did you first get hooked up with Victor?
It was a high school chum of mine was married to Victor's agent.
Huh.
And when the time came to do the melon book, which was the first one, he suggested Victor. And we hit it off immediately and realized we had the same concept for what we wanted to do.
Well, I mean, for those of you who have not seen the book, I urge you to take a look at the book. The photographs are, they describe your fruit so beautifully. I mean, you go into this wonderful descriptive prose and about the fruit and the feel. And then along comes Victor's photograph, and it's exactly as you've described it. But, I mean, the colors are just jump off the page. They're wonderful.
Exactly. He painted a picture in images, and I did what I call pen portraits. I told the stories of each individual variety.
Yeah. There's a young man, a food photographer also, Michael Harlan Turkle, who is going to be debuting a show here soon on the network called The Food Scene, S-E-E-N, as we look at it. And he's done some marvelous photographs for the Edible series and some interesting publications. And I'm sure that Victor would be a wonderful guest for his show, but that's another topic.
Okay.
What I want to know is how, I've read a little of your background, but so I know some, but how did you really get into gardening, like as serious as you are about it?
Well, my family was initially in the food business here in Brooklyn. Goldman's Italian American was the family Italian dry goods store on Columbia Street. And so I grew up with the mentality or family atmosphere that celebrated food. And I had my first garden at the age of 18 on the North Shore of Long Island. And I discovered that I seemed to have a natural gift for kitchen gardening. So And I love putting food on the table. And ever since, my hands have been in the soil.
You've had dirty hands.
Oh, yeah. Certifiable.
Well, I had actually heard about your gardens up in Rhinebeck in Dutchess County, New York. I think, well, I first saw it in, I'd heard your name about with your book out and some mention with Martha Stewart having appearances on her show. And then I saw this spread in one of the shelter magazines. I think it was Metropolitan Home.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
beautiful spread. Well, then I was sitting at lunch with a friend of mine who happened to be a guest on the show, Peter Kaminsky, who's written a wonderful book, Seven Fires, on Argentinian grilling. We were sitting at lunch here at Roberta's, and he was eating a tomato. It was out of season. He said, "Why did I even order a tomato?" He said, "What happened to that taste? You know, when you were a kid and you used to bite into a tomato, and it would just, the taste was just, and he couldn't describe it. He said, "Am I just remembering this, or is that gone?" And my friend Don and I both looked at him and said, "It's kind of gone. We can't find it." And so what he was describing was this luscious, almost pornographic sensation of biting into this juicy tomato. And then I heard about your book, The Heirloom Tomato, and boom, there it is.
And boom, the good news is they're not gone. In fact, there's a whole wide world of heirloom tomatoes. I mean, most people, when they think of heirloom tomatoes, they think Brandywine, but there's so much more to the world of heirlooms than most people realize. And the Seed Savers Exchange, for example, that, you know, operates a gene bank, has a collection of over 6,000 different heirloom tomatoes. So they're in the world. There's, you know, of course, a revival in home gardening these days. And
I would call it more of a movement than a, I mean, it's a real movement.
It's
rather than a revival.
Well, it's definitely a movement, yeah. Too. And, you know, gardeners are coming back, you know, in droves to the garden, lots of newbies starting out. And the number of tomatoes carried by commercial seed companies has increased about 200% since about 1981. So, you know, it's marvelous. It's a marvelous time to start gardening.
Well, I think tomatoes are the one vegetable, fruit, that has captured most people's attention in terms of the awareness of heirloom. But there's also squash, heirloom squash, and melons, as you've illustrated in your book. But when we say heirloom, what I think as an education for a lot of our listeners, what do we really mean by heirloom?
Okay, there are a lot of definitions of the term heirloom. Here's mine. An heirloom is a variety of value that breeds true from seed and thus can be handed down to the next generation. Many of them are oldies but goodies, some are of more recent vintage, but all of them are keepers worth preserving. You know, there are some people who say heirlooms are the province of foodies, but it's just not so. Heirlooms are the people's tomato, you know, and squash and melons, right, bred by amateurs, farmers, and gardeners, and designed to be homegrown. And so those varieties were saved for years because of their fine qualities, their flavor, their disease resistance, their drought tolerance, and so forth. And so, you know, we're the beneficiary of an incredible heritage.
Well, and some of these varieties were facing extinction, correct? I mean, except for a few farmers.
That's correct.
But
so,
how and why? I mean, what happened in the vegetable gardening industry that, or that's just it. What happened?
What happened? In short, the advent of modern F1 hybrids displaced the old sort. So, you know, when the new, let's say when the old is not preserved and the new replaces it, you're in trouble. Enter the Seed Savers Exchange, which is the nation's premier seed saving organization, founded in 1975, you know, with a mission to preserve these old fashioned foods from extinction, and develop a network of people who are committed to collecting, conserving, and sharing heirloom seeds and plants with each other. And we estimate over the course of the last 30 plus years that about 1 million vegetable samples have been traded between members. And so, in other words, we're promoting on-farm, in-garden conservation.
Wow. That is, I mean, that's a lot of seeds. I mean, I was thinking, because a lot of people think heirloom just means old. And of course, as you just pointed out, it's not.
It's something of value. Now, heirlooms are different from hybrids. Heirlooms actually breed true from seed. They're old reliables. They produce offspring like their parents. So if you save harvested seed to regrow, it will breed true. Hybrids, modern F1 hybrids, are the result of a cross between two highly inbred parent lines. And in short, if you try to save seeds, they don't breed true.
You get surprises sometimes. And
you get surprises, and you have to go back to the company store every year to buy seed.
Well, that's interesting. A little planned obsolescence there to keep us dependent on their seeds.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So that old profit motive. My mission in life is keeping seeds in the hands of farmers and gardeners where they belong.
Oh, that's really interesting. When I thought of heirloom meaning old and not knowing the actual definition, I was thinking, but being a culinary historian, I'm thinking, but tomatoes, a nightshade plant, and the original tomatoes that grew, we would not want to eat. They would not be very tasty.
I want to tell you that some of the more primitive types, like the currants, that are the smallest tomatoes of all, have the highest acid and sugar levels of any tomato. Hmm. So in other words, the smaller the tomato in general, the higher the sugar and acid, and thus the more excellent the flavor. So things like Alberto Shatters, which is 1 gram in weight. It's a currant tomato, amazingly tomato-y and crunchy. Sarah's Galapagos, named after my daughter, red currant, many other sorts. Believe it or not, are primitive in character, but flavorful. And if you have room in your garden, because they form a weedy tangle, they're well worth it.
Oh, I will have to definitely, you know, because I try to garden, but my land is not that good, and it's, you know, I'm a weekend gardener, so I don't have the time to devote to it. But inevitably, the smaller tomatoes, the cherry tomatoes, the pear, the little teardrop pear tomatoes, they are always the most flavorful.
That's right. So flavor is correlated with high acid and high sugar. And of course, you know, there are many other components of flavor, and a lot depends on how, you know, if the tomato is grown.
All right. Well, then I'm sure. And the setting that it's in, right? So I guess your involvement from 1975, you said, with Seed Savers? Or?
Well, I've been involved. I became a member of Seed Savers in about 1990, and then I became what's called a listed member. That means I offered seeds to others through the annual exchange. I've been gardening since I was 18, so that's a long time. I mean, yikes, almost 40 years.
We don't have to tell that. When people say that you've been referred to as a vegetable rights activist, this would account for the seed. That's because of the seed saving, right?
Actually, this is a name I gave myself.
Oh.
I'm definitely inordinately attached to vegetables. My eyes kind of glaze over when I look at flowers and perennials. So it's always been vegetables for me. And, you know, because of the threats of extinction and so forth, I became an advocate.
Well, you mentioned that when you were first cultivating, I guess, your prize-winning melons, because you did. You won a lot of prizes for some of your melons, right?
I did. I was involved in the world of competitive vegetable growing for many years.
At the famous Dutchess County Fair. And you mentioned that you just looked at these. I mean, you got very glazed over as you looked at some of these incredible, beautiful melons and cut them open and slurped their insides. And is this when you first realized that you could grow miracles, as you said?
Well, I tell you to paraphrase Liberty High Bailey, you know, his famous horticulturist and hero of mine, but yeah, I became aware I grew miracles even early in life. I mean, early in my teen years, my father called vegetables and fruits a mechaya. You know, in Yiddish, it's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
Or a meichel. And it was always a miracle to him, and for me, it became a miracle as well.
Oh,
it's just
terrific.
The beauty of growing something and seeing it fruit. And
well, we're going to hear about more of these miracles when we come back. Hi, we're back with Amy Goldman, a seed saver and author of many vegetable books, the most recent, The Heirloom Tomato. And I think, you know, everyone who goes to farmers markets, of course, sees, you know, the heirloom tomatoes. And often they cost a little more, but I think that everyone is so curious that they try them. And once you try them, as they say, once you try it, you never go back, right?
That's right.
It is so good. Tell me, when did you first plant an heirloom vegetable plant? I mean, it just didn't happen. I mean, you had to do it with intention.
When I first started gardening, I was growing a lot of hybrids, and I didn't know the difference between a hybrid and an heirloom at that point. But I would say it was when I read a book by Rosalind Creasy called Cooking from the Garden in the late 80s. And that's where I first learned about tomatoes like Radiator Charlie's Mortgage Lifter and Howling Mob Corn and, you know, Lazy Housewife Bean. And I became intrigued, and I started growing them myself. And I read about Seed Savers in her book, and I became a member. And I started growing these for exhibition at the Dutchess County Fair, the New York State Fair in Syracuse, even the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society's Fall Harvest Show, and winning blue ribbons, wowing fairgoers. But then I got more serious about it. I realized that, there was a role I could play in preserving some of these wonderful varieties. And as the years went on, I became more of an advocate, joined the board of Seed Savers, and eventually became chair of the board.
Well, now,
and now it's my life.
Yeah, and we thank you for it, because if it weren't for you, we would not have so many of these wonderful varieties that we ourselves and our children certainly will never have tasted.
Well, and there are 12,000 other members of Seed Savers Exchange, people like me, backyard gardeners, orchardists, who are keeping the rarest of the rare alive.
Well, I don't want to forget to give that website out for anyone who's interested.
It's seedsavers.org.
Seedsavers.org. Okay, and they're located where?
They're in Decorah, Iowa.
But they have members all over the...
But it's a national nonprofit, members all over the country and around the world as well.
Around the world as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, now, saving seeds, you can't just grow a plant and decide, I'm going to save this seed and it's an heirloom. And tell us a little bit about how you save a seed.
All right. Well, let's say we're talking about tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
There's the casual way to do it, and there's a not-so-casual way. I mean... Most people, you know, me included, I mean, everywhere I go, I'm on the alert and I collect seeds. I'm even taking them off of dinner plates in restaurants and filching one or two from a garden here or there. And then I put them in a napkin or a paper towel and dry them and then take them home and grow them. That's pretty casual and it works in many cases. But if you want to maintain maximum seed purity and prevent honeybees and sweat bees from bringing in pollen from other plants that could result in cross-pollination,
right,
then one easy way to do that is to isolate by distance. In other words, grow that tomato variety isolated by, 50 to 100 feet from another variety with which it could cross. But this is all in my book, Everything You Need to Know to Grow Your Own, recipes to make the most of your harvest, and instructions on how to become a seed saver.
Oh, good.
Okay. And for, by the way, the recipes
in the tomato book are absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. But saving seeds of tomato and bean, which are mostly self-pollinating, are pretty easy. And then it goes from there.
And, well, I have to say that when when I jokingly call the show a show about vegetable or plant pornography, you gave a description of hand pollinating squash, and there are pictures in there of you doing it too, and it was such a sensitive, personal activity. Now, hand pollinate?
Okay, we're talking about crops like squash or pumpkins, where there's a male and a female flower. And
on each plant, right?
Exactly. So for tomato, it's a perfect flower with male and female parts in one place. So to maintain seed purity, I mean, this is only if you want to maintain pure seed. I mean, if you just want to grow, you know, for the enjoyment and the eating, go ahead.
Well, let's.
But okay, so
let's talk about it. Maybe there's some listeners out there who really want to preserve an heirloom variety.
All right, here's what you do. And for me, there's nothing in the world I'd rather be doing on a sunny day in early July than getting down on my hands and knees and transferring pollen from the male flower to the female flower. And you know, it's all in my squash book, The Complete Squash, but the night before, you tape up the male flowers and the female flowers with masking tape, the ones you think are going to open the next
morning.
Separate
them, sleep in separate beds, guys.
And you can tell they're going to open the next morning because they change color. It's with a practiced eye, easy to do. You come back the next morning at about 7 before the bees are active. You pluck the male blossoms, usually 2 for every 1 female. And of course, it's the female flower that has the unfertilized ovary at the base of the flower that becomes the fruit. So you're going to bring the male flower over to the female. And when you open the tape on that female blossom and you smell that fragrance, it's such a heady aroma that, to me, there's nothing in the world. Shalimar, Chanel No. 5, forget it. This, you know, squash blossoms have them beat. And then you just, like a paintbrush, take the male blossom and rub it on the stigma of the female, close the blossom up, retape it so the bees don't bring in foreign pollen that might contaminate it. I mark the base of the flower with a ribbon, surveyor's tape, and I know that if that starts to grow within a few days, that I will save that for pure seed later
save
in the season.
Save that one fruit, so you
save
know that.
Save that one fruit.
I
know that seed is pure. Mm-hmm. That harvested seed will produce offspring like the parents. And so, you know, it's just joy. It's a joy for me. And
interesting.
And
but otherwise, like you said, I told you this was an X-rated show.
This is
I was
plant
mesmerized.
Parenthood.
Plant parenthood. That's great. I love it. But otherwise, like the tomato plant, you say, which the flower has both parts, male and female, in it. So that way you must separate it. Or
well,
what if you cover it?
With the tomato, they're mostly self-pollinating, but there's some degree of crossing by insects. So if you want to be really sure that you've got pure seed, you isolate them 100 feet from the other variety with which they might cross. Or you can even use small bags and bag the blossoms before they open. They're little muslin bags, you know, that you can get from seed suppliers. And that's an easy way to just put a mechanical barrier
between the bees and the flowers,
and you know to save that seed later.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's labor intensive, but what a labor of love. Just really.
Well, the beginning seed saver can start really easily by growing one variety of each type in the garden, so there'll be no crossing. You can grow your favorite tomato, your pepper, your pumpkin, your melon, and so forth. Just one of each, and you'll know that those will be pure.
Now, peppers. I can grow peppers on my land. It's dry, it's rocky, and the peppers love it there. So maybe I'll try saving some of those seeds this year with my peppers.
Yeah, why not? Make sure that they're, you know, open pollinated standard varieties, and they're not F1 hybrids.
Okay. So, I mean, you figure they've bred these things for shelf life and to be trucked across the country and stock the supermarkets. So those hybrid varieties, no wonder they taste like styrofoam half the time, right? I mean, they've just bred all the juiciness out of them. Oh, because they are such perishable products.
Well, my years of experience as a vegetable gardener have taught me that vegetables ripened on the vine in full sun,
that's right.
Heirlooms are the most delicious of all.
Yeah. And they may not travel well, but boy, they taste good.
Well,
when they're,
peppers travel. Yeah, peppers are very easy to grow, and even for city dwellers in containers. Huh. They're wonderful and ornamental as well.
That's true. They definitely are. What you actually talking about breeding for different purposes, something that I had known about. I'm sure other people had read about it, but you did tell the story about how the Japanese have really learned to breed things for convenience and practical purposes. And that was the melons that they grow in shapes for the refrigerator?
Right. There's, a big lucrative market for melons and watermelons in Japan. Where in fact, Japan, they're doing some marvelous breeding with all sorts of crops. So some of my favorite melons are Japanese, old-fashioned condiment types. They're crispier and not as sweet as American sorts.
More like on the order of a cucumber type of melon?
Yeah, something like that.
Huh.
Slightly sweeter.
But they would grow the baby plants. They'd put a box around them or something and make them square?
To grow a watermelon into a mold, yeah. And those fetch very high prices.
$80 a melon, I heard.
I'm not sure what the going rate is now. But
they stack well, and they can fit in you can fit a couple of them in the refrigerator.
Well, if you want a personal-sized watermelon, there are lots of really nice heirloom types, like Golden Midget, for example, which to me it sort of reminds me of a ripe papaya because it's inside it's salmon pink, and on the outside it's bright yellow with pencil striping, and they're very small, and it's a personal size watermelon. Hmm. And lots of others like that. Hmm.
What was the name of that one?
Golden Midget.
Golden Midget.
Yeah.
So
lovely. There are melons that would do well in Brooklyn as well.
Well, this active gardening spawned another career for you as well, and you became a sculptor. Now, were you involved in art and producing art in terms other than the garden?
Not at all. I developed something called Rare Forms. It's a line of limited edition bronze sculptures of some of my vegetables. And really, nature is the artist here. When I grow something in my garden that has a beautiful shape and form, and I want to preserve it for posterity, then I take it to the local foundry in the Hudson Valley, where they make a mold. And using the ancient lost wax process, we create bronze sculptures that are true to life.
They are absolutely, and they are just stunning.
And then, I supervise it every step of the way, and especially the patina, which is the finishing touch. I started doing this just for myself because I wanted these things to last forever. Mm. It's part of my shtick, preserving in words, photographs, bronzes, and seeds, of course, our vanishing vegetable heritage.
Well, you can see these bronzes, and I think you can actually maybe even be able to purchase them in your online gallery. It's rareforms.com?
That's right.
Rareforms.com. Well, Amy, it's been an eye-opener for me in terms of gardening, and I learned a lot just in this short half hour that we've spent together. And I just want to remind people that your website is rareforms.com, and your books are Melons for the Passionate Grower, The Complete Squash, and the newest one, The Heirloom Tomato. All beautiful, beautiful books, very instructive books. And is the tomato book the only one with recipes?
No, they all have recipes.
They all have recipes. The tomato book has, I think, probably the most, because I really
well,
read
let's
those and
face
noticed them.
It, there's not a lot you can do with melons in cookery, but tomatoes are
the recipes are great, and
Victor
Schrager, your photographer, just did a superb job. Amy Goldman, the author, the gardener, the director of the board of Seed Savers Exchange, and a pleasure to have you as my guest. Thank you so much. You've been listening to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio here on Heritage Radio Network.
For appearing on A Taste of the Past, guest Amy Goldman has received a free 365-day gift card from Zagat. Use this complimentary 365zagat.com gift card to enjoy trusted Zagat ratings and reviews derived from the opinions of 375,000 surveyors around the globe, all conveniently located in one place. Make your voice heard. Vote in Zagat's New York City Restaurant Survey now through May 16th. More information at www.zagat.com. Thanks for listening.